always try to start off with any European guest with an apology. And I'm sorry, Michael. Thank you. Michael is up at the god-awful hour of 3 a.m. Thank you for bringing your intellect to the table. Thank you for waking up. Enough amphetamine will do wonders for people. I understand. It's okay.
Jeff, it's a great pleasure to be with you in the top of the morning, the top of the Spanish morning to you and your guests. It's great to be here again.
Well, thank you. I have worked with many journalists over the decades, and there are none better than yourself, sir, when it comes to surveying, analyzing, and presenting what's really going on a very large panorama and scale. And that's Europe. You understand. And that's why I'm grateful to always receive your editorials. I put them up. Let me just ask you if you would start and just tell us how, first of all, how much time does Europe have left before it's gone?
How long is a piece of string, Jeff? But
wow.
It's a difficult one to answer, but I would say it's pretty much imminent. It's all already started. How does that sound for imminent? It's in a frightful mess here. The European leadership, so-called, are probably more unpopular than were the leaders of the 15-nation Soviet bloc, Poland, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, as it was at the time. And the current crop of politicians, Jeff, that we have got here is less popular than they were. But remember that they were overthrown, and that's where we're at now.
Got it. I really feel I can't even imagine what it must be like to say living in Germany, whatever, with all of the history, all of the travail that Germany has been through, all of the efforts that they have shepherded the actual building and flowering of a culture that goes back since before Columbus in Germany. I mean, it goes way back. And now to have these, sorry, my opinion, not speaking for you, but these are subhuman fourth world animals, and they should not by any measure be in a first world advanced culture. None of these people. It's an invasion, and I don't know why the regular people can't see it. They are being taken down, and they're not acting like it. Oh, they grumble and mumble, and I know what they're doing to the AfD, which would easily be the dominant party in Germany if things were honest. So your turn. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, I was born, I went to sea, a British merchant seaman, back in 1959. The first port of call was New York, and afterwards we went to San Francisco, Oakland, and we went right up the West Coast. But in England then, there was virtually no coloureds at all. It was a totally white country. So it's happened in my grown-up adult life. So it's shocking now. If you go around Birmingham and Coventry, London, Manchester, all of these cities in Britain now, you may as well, as a matter of fact, Jeff, I remember I was attending a concert in Blackburn in Lancashire, northwest England, and I had a bit of a break. I had an hour to kill before the concert started, so I thought I will go to the local parish church. And I'll sit there in contemplation for an hour. It was a warm summer's night. I went into the church and I sat down in a pew, so the windows were open naturally. And you know, Jeff, the voices outside that church, I might just as easily have been sitting in the Punjab in Pakistan. It was a shock. Well, I've never forgotten it. That was 35 years ago. So it happened in a very, very short time. And, of course, what happened to England happened to Germany. They must be still in shell shock after World War II.
Sure.
But it's a horrifying situation right across Europe, and it's showing. And it goes back to your leading question about how long has Europe got to last. It depends in what aspect you put that in. But I would say that the political crisis, and I was just writing this today for an American periodical, is reminded me very much, Jeff, of 1970, when the shipyard strikes broke out in Gdansk, Danzig, Germany, occupied Poland. And it was like the laser. And it was because of the shortage of food and the price of food and the velvet mess that those strikes in Poland in 1970 broke out. And they spread right through the Soviet bloc, the other 15 nations. Now, we know our history, and we know that over time, until 1990, so we're only talking about a very short period, teenage years, is the entire Soviet bloc collapsed. That's where we are at now. As a matter of fact, it was the last Russian Soviet president, Mikhail Gorbachev, who said a long time ago, before he resigned, is why is the European Union working so hard to copy the Soviet Union? Well, we're going to copy it very soon because it's going to collapse in exactly the same way. Do you know, Jeff, that the president, so-called president of France, the approval rating is just 11%. The same can be said for Keir Starmer of Britain, and the same can be said of Friedrich Merz in Germany. Now, you've got three leading heads of state of the three leading economies over the Atlantic in Europe. And between them, they can't muster 33% approval rating. That is pretty tough. Now, when you can't move them, and they're sticking together like birds, when you can't move them, then people will follow the advice of many wise men in the past, including President Kennedy. They will take democracy to the streets, and I think this is where we're at now. As a matter of fact, today it was announced that France has just spent $21 million on grenade launchers, not to fight the Russians, but to fight the French demonstrators. That's where Europe is at the moment.
And those are going to end up being Frenchmen and French women. That's probably what's going to happen. Yeah, so.
Exactly. And the yellow vests and the other violence that has occurred through not just France, but Germany and Britain and other countries, is already costing white lives. So, yes, that's where we're at. So I would say rather than imminent, it's already started. When the historians talk about 1st of November 2025, they will say that the crisis that eventually led to the collapse of the European Union was already underway back in 2025.
I understand. It's a little difficult over here for the average American who, even if they have the time or the interest to study what's going on in Europe, but me, I look and I know I have a pretty good knowledge of what's happening there. But it's still the grief of people in Spain, in Italy, in all the countries, how the Brits feel about having been just assaulted in the most hideous sociological, cultural way you can imagine. These are animals. They shouldn't be there. They should be back in their own sewer. They should not be in a first world country. It's outrageous. And I wonder if the average European understands the full extent of the betrayal that has been perpetrated against them. I don't know about that part. They must know, though, right, Mike? Do they know? They have to. They've been sold out.
I think they're in denial. You know, back in 1978, when things were not nowhere near as bad, you know, you could walk anywhere in England and not find a black face. But then I was jailed. I received 6 4-month prison sentences for publishing flyers which warned exactly of what is happening today. And it has happened today. So I was talking about the calamity that was facing Europe back in 1968. So was Enoch Powell, the best prime minister that Britain never had. And others like John Tyndall, a friend of mine at the National Front. All of us were warning about this. But the British people, I think it was George Orwell, said that the English don't see the writing on the wall until their backs are up against it. And this is what we're saying. Right, but now their backs are up against it now. You know, they're living, they've been living under an illusion, you know, that maybe it won't happen. But it has happened, and it's in a shocking state. But what is helping matters, of course, is the internet. You know, when I think of my own situation now, thank you for your compliments about the writing that I do, the journalism.
You're very welcome.
I was voted a writer of the year in 2011 by the Euro Weekly News, which at time was the biggest English-speaking publication, periodical weekly, in Europe. I've been writing about it all the time, but, you know, people are finally waking up to reality, and they are taken to the streets. And 3 million, an estimated 3 million, took to the streets in London not so long ago in opposition to the small boats arriving in great armadas on the English coast. And I like to joke about Putin and a military aide is saying to him, we could be building submarines to stop England invading Russia. He says, just build the small boats. You can't stop those.
I am appalled to see what's happened from over here. And I feel for the people. If you mention denial, there is denial there. But, I mean, how long can it go on? The rapes, the inhuman behaviors of these people. The behaviors are really nothing more than I would expect. I don't know these stupid liberal socialist elements. Oh, they'll come here, they'll see how good it is, they'll want to avail themselves of education, the good life, they'll work hard. Oh, please, they're going to take you down and rip you to shreds is what they're going to do. And they are.
Yeah. People are scared because, you know, if you are convicted of a racially aggravated attack, for instance, anything that is racially aggravated in England, and it's the same in Germany, the same in Spain and everywhere else, you get twice. So you're a white man, I'm a white man.
Oh.
If I attack you or if you attack me, you're going to get, say, 6 months in the slum. But if one of us is coloured, then the white one is going to get 12 months. He gets double. So I remember I was queuing in a post office in Liverpool, in England, of course, and there was one particular department that was just handling money out to the refugees. Mm-hmm. One clerk was doing that, and the queue of refugees was out of the door. And each one was going up to this little desk, they were showing some papers, and they were walking away with several hundred pounds in their hand.
Sure.
And I was standing behind an elderly lady who was waiting to buy stamps. They can't afford television license stamps here. They can't afford electricity stamps. They buy them every month, you see, because they can't afford the bill that comes in regular. And as one of these subhumans walked out, he held up a wad of notes, and he said, "Bugger you, England." And
see?
The old lady, he was gloating. And the old lady who was standing in front of me, she says, "Why on earth doesn't somebody do something about this?" I said, "Because if I struck him, I would get 5 years immediately without any remission because it's a racially provoked attack." So we are being suppressed. I suppose it's like Germany when it was occupied, the Ruhr, for instance. When if you attacked a French-occupied soldier, then you spent the rest of your life in Nick. And this is the way it is here. So they're not only apathetic, but they are frightened. They are frightened of the authorities. When? We've got to remember, Jeff, it's 1979 and things have got much worse than that. I got a sentence of 4 months in prison just for publishing a sticker which says, "Race mixing destroys your people." This is a biological fact. Some of my customers were Asians. They were buying my little flyers by the thousand that said, "Race mixing destroys our people." I got 4 months for that.
Well, thank God it wasn't 4 years, which it could be now. How was it, and the same thing's happened here, how was it that the courts in England were almost invariably taken over by the communists? How did they do that? It had to come from some PM, right? Who makes the appointments? They don't run for... Do they run for these positions in alleged elections?
No, they don't run. No, not in Europe. They're appointed. There is no voting. There is no democratic process to the appointment of judges, the judiciary in Europe. They are appointed by the establishment, and everybody knows that even the ordinary policeman on the street knows that if he steps out of line, his job, his pension, and absolutely everything is gone. So it must be, I suppose, a little bit like it was, well, very much like it was, in Bolshevik-occupied Russia in the Stalinist times, that if you said anything about anything that was critical of the establishment, as in George Orwell times, and we live in those times now, then you were going to go into the slammer. In the case of Russia, you were going to go to Siberia. In my case, it was Walton Jail, which has been in Liverpool, which has been described as the most horrendous jail in Europe, and it was pretty horrendous. And that was just for publishing flyers that were critical of the immigration system at the time, and things actually got worse, much worse than I could have described. You're in a foreign country now because of the crisis with Russia. Of course, this is a manufactured crisis. I can't imagine anything that Putin would want worse than occupying Europe. Nobody would want to occupy Europe.
Oh, absolutely agree. Yes.
It's in such a mess that nobody could sort Europe out. So there's no possibility of that. But it's a distraction from what we are talking about, an absolute distraction. If they're worried about the Russians, then they won't be worried. But again, thanks to the internet, you know, we have the most wonderful memes, and memes are powerful. I wish, Jeff, that people would use them more often. You know, when you create a meme, which I do, and they very often appear in my stories, they can be read by tens of thousands, even millions of people, if people share them. And I have a lot of quotations from top politicians, not just in the West, but in Russia as well, that most people don't realize that sharing memes on the internet has a far greater impact than mainstream media has. So we must act accordingly. You know, when we go back to the solidarity protests in Poland in 1970, which seems like yesterday to me, they only had contraband typewriters and duplicators, Gestetner, you know, duplicators.
Really?
I had one.
And even still because of the war, right?
They didn't have anything like the reach that we have today. Uh-huh. You know, I used to have an old Gestetner duplicating machine, and it was hand-driven. And when I look at the leaflets that we used to post then in 1970 and push through people's doors, we can do now on the internet in a couple of hours what we couldn't do in a couple of years. So people have got to realize the enormous power that we have. When I do a story, can you imagine? I used to do a story back in 1970, which, again, as I say, is not too far away. Yeah, I'm still living. And it used to reach, you know, I had to go to the post office, had to buy stamps and put the addresses on all of the envelopes, send them out, and it'd be a few days before people read that news. When I go on there now, and I'll give you a typical example of my news platform today, I do a story, and by midnight that night, over 2,000 people have read it. Now, we couldn't even dream about that in the 1970s, but everybody's got it. There's nothing that I don't have any big studio. I don't have anybody helping me. It's just coming out between my ears every day.
Gotcha.
And I've got that kind of reach all over the world. I'm getting mail in from Latin America, from the United States, Australia, all over Europe. When I look at my statistics, visits and see where the people are reading my stories. Japan, the Far East, India, it's an amazing thing that we've got, and we have to use the power of the internet to bring these people down, because they're afraid of it. They are, the politicians are genuinely afraid of it, and they're trying every which way to close it down. In Europe now, they're trying to control the internet, what we post on Facebook and social media. They're trying to control it, and the London Metropolitan Police have actually got more cops who are monitoring social media than they have on the big murder cases. That's how far we've gone.
Is that another extension of the fear from above? They're manifesting it through the cops?
Yep. Again, there's an awful lot of memes that if you are make the slightest objection to your country being overrun by third world immigrants, they're not coming here to help us, they're coming here to help them. But the policemen will be knocking on the door, you know, in a very short time. People are afraid. We are living in genuinely Orwellian times. And, it's a difficult period, but we do need men and women, of course, who are prepared to stand up. Because as in the Soviet bloc, when you come out en masse into the squares and into the malls, the streets and the avenues, there's not a great deal they can do about it. They're having to release prisoners prematurely in the UK. I should imagine it's the same elsewhere, simply because the prisons are full and they can't build them quick enough. It's very, very much like Gorbachev warned the Soviet Union, and we really don't need it. And again, I think that the crisis is upon us, because not only have we got the crisis of immigration, you've got the crisis of the terrible debt that these countries and Europe are laboring under.
It's not just America that's $38 trillion in debt. I'm not saying you have the same amount over there, but it's all debt-based servitude to the international, global. We know who they are. We know exactly who they are.
You know, and it's exactly the same in France. France, they can't even pay for the debt. Now, just imagine you and your many, many listeners out there. You go and borrow, and I've been more or less in this situation where I got into trouble through a bankruptcy that was not of my own making years ago. Right. And I paid, in one month, I paid £700 off the credit card debts that I had accumulated to try and save my business. It's a long story, but the government had banned guns, and I was selling guns for a living. So the bankruptcy was the government's fault. It was not mine, which they admitted. But never mind that. I was paying £700 a month to settle my debts with the credit card companies that I was using to try, in a vain attempt, to save my business. And I remember saying to my very erudite wife at the time, God bless her, R.I.P., is, we just paid £700. How much did it actually reduce our debt by? And she said, you don't want to know. I said, I do want to know. She said, £70.
Oh, my.
£630 had been on interest. So
That's highway robbery and worse. You're trying to break the hearts of the people. Destroy them.
That's right. That's where the United States and Europe is at the moment. You know, we're talking about France, and the economic head of France has just admitted that our children will not be able to service the debts that France has got. No, it's not on the same scale as the United States, but the French economy is not on the scale of the United States, but it's all a matter of scale. So France and Britain and Spain, the other countries too, absolutely Germany, they are in a very, very similar situation by scale to the United States. They cannot service their debts. They're like I was back in 1989. They can't service their debts. And this is the situation that we find ourselves in today. So it's going to collapse. So obviously the Russian threat is just a ploy to distract people from what is really happening. Because if you take the so-called Russian threat out of it, people are
dog.
They're going to be staring. They're going to be sitting up in their beds with their eyes wide staring at the horror that confronts them. Is when the economy collapses, and they won't. They're talking about being not being able to pay the food stamps in the United States today.
Yeah.
So what happens to this in Europe when they're not able to pay this massive amounts of money to keep the immigrants here? The migrants are going to riot, and we have got a powder keg in our hands in Europe. So it's a problem.
Well, if the people, Michael, if the people began to rise up to fight the invaders, the government would come down, from what I understand, in too many cases, on the side of the invaders, and would probably turn their weapons on the residents of these countries. The white European residents would suffer, unless there's a government that's ready to fall and will be taken over, like the AfD, should by all rights be the dominant party in Germany right now. I just don't know how it's going to work. When I see all the courts ruling as Bolsheviks, giving decisions as Zionist socialists, I don't have a lot of hope. I'm sorry to say, I just don't. I don't know how you're going to get those people out of there.
No, nobody is representative of the people. We're not. It doesn't matter whether we're talking any of the 27 countries that make up the European Union. Is none of them are representative of the people. None are reflecting the vision of the people.
Yeah.
And what were happening, and I think it was Putin that said this, is what will happen is during the elections in Europe, people will swing to the what you Americans call the conservative parties. We call them the nationalist parties. The parties are friendly towards Russia.
Pretty much a given. Yeah, okay. Yep.
Yeah. And they will start to change things. Now, he is a cautious man, and this is his view on it. I think that we're going to see, probably our thing, but it's not being reported. We all remember that great movie, Death Wish. And, I've written several vigilantes.
That's what we need. We need Charles Bronson for president.
I think it's happening, Jeff. It's just not being reported all the time because I have access to the bottom media. Finding out what is happening in the world today, but other people don't read and don't search for the media the way I do. So they're only getting it, say, off the BBC or El País or whatever the German press is. They're only getting it, the controlled press. But what they are doing is they are shadow banning. They're shadow banning the real news that would really worry people. So this, again, is where the internet is. Julian Assange said that the internet is burning the mainstream media to the ground. And this is the power that we have at our disposal. And we don't need to use Gestapo machines anymore. We can get the word out there now. And the police are concerned about it because they know that a demonstration in London or Berlin or Madrid, it can start almost immediately and drag people in because of the internet. It's very, very powerful, but people have got to be inflamed enough. And we saw this inflammation in Southport, coincidentally the place of my birth in England, and when three little girls were murdered by an immigrant. And the press tried to cover it up. They tried to excuse his behavior. They were showing he was a 17-year-old at the time. He looked like a monster, but the press was showing pictures of him looking sweet and innocent as a 9-year-old in a school uniform. Do you remember that? And when the police...
Horrific.
When the people in England, especially Southport, rallied against this terrible crime and against the consequences of immigration, the police cracked down, as you said a little bit earlier, Jeff, the police cracked down on the people. They were cracking skulls, white skulls, with their nightsticks. It was a terrible thing. One woman, you know, so outraged, and we all say, when we get angry, Jeff, we are all guilty of saying things that in the cool light of day was perhaps a little bit extreme. She said,
that's right.
We should be burning down.
It's called being human.
She got a mother of three or four children, all of them at school age, and she got 2 years without remission just for saying that. Yeah.
See, I don't think Orwell would believe what's going on now to some degree. I think he'd say, how could it go this far? How could it have gone this far? I don't know what he'd say, but to me, it boggles the mind.
Well, I've been scratching my head for years, and I've pointed out to them, you know, that England has had the opportunity on several occasions, Oswald Mosley, John Tyndall, and others, including myself, Enoch Powell especially, they had the opportunity to elect leaders.
But his reputation over here was quite exemplary. He was thought of, and through the crooked press, but he was thought of, and I used to run clips of speeches he gave. Remarkable man, but he doesn't get any real, he doesn't get his honest due in history right now. Maybe he will someday, but he was a harbinger of things to come, like you.
And it's a bit like you know, they will wake up, but we've got to wake them up. We've got to get as many people passionate about it as we are and do something about it. You're doing something about it. Many of your listeners are doing something about it, and we've got to grow those forces.
Is there much, I don't know, I think I'm actually banned in some countries over there. I don't know. Are people listening to this program over there? Do you know?
Don't forget, Jeff, you know, to send me the link, because I can get it out there. I'm already, when I told people that I would be speaking on this Friday night to you in the United States, I'm already getting requests for the link to the listening.
You'll have it.
Again, this is the solidarity that they had in Poland and the Czechoslovakia. Mm-hmm. Spreading throughout the Soviet bloc, we have got to help each other through this crisis, and that's the only way that we're going to survive it. Because I remember my mother, who used to say, when America catches a cold, when America sneezes, Europe catches a cold. I think it moved the other way now, is that when Europe sneezes, America catches a cold. We need each other, Jeff. You know, it's a shrinking world, and the Western Alliance is not the big, powerful monster that it used to be, and we need each other. America can't go on its own. I know Trump, to a certain extent, has got an isolationist policy, and good luck with that one. A lot of people wish that America had had an isolationist policy in 1940, not to happen.
Let me suggest this. Right now, as we speak, I had a call earlier this evening from a friend who's got good connections, and he said that the two islands in the Caribbean, right off the shore of Venezuela, Trinidad and Tobago, have ordered their military on highest alert to defend them. Something's coming, and then there has been a notice to air transport aviation pilots, NOTAM, no fly zone, over all of Puerto Rico right now, just put in today. Actually, it takes place in another hour and a half. No flying over Puerto Rico. All of our bombers and jets. Trump is about to invade Venezuela. So much for his isolationist charade, or charade, as some people say. He's a joke. He's an idiot. And I don't know who the hell controls him, but they can't keep his mouth in sync with reality. He's changing his story all the time. Anyway, go ahead, Michael.
Well, it's not the 1970s anymore. It's not President Nixon. He's no President Nixon either, you know. No. And this is, you know, some people say, I think it was the president of Venezuela, you know, that opening up
Maduro.
a new Vietnam. He'd written Maduro. He simply don't need, and America doesn't need. Now, wars cost money, a hell of a lot of money, and you can't afford a war with Venezuela. And they're well advanced now, and they're being assisted by Russia and China. So if America has any designs on Venezuela, then they've got to have the designs on Russia, and they're arming Venezuela. So this is a hot spot that they need to keep out of. And I don't understand Trump, you know, because I write about him a lot, and somebody called him the zigzag president, because he says one thing on Tuesday, and he says completely the opposite on Wednesday.
Correct.
It's very hard to understand him. There is absolutely no consistency, and even there, you've got to read between the lines of what he's saying.
He loves to run his mouth, Michael. He loves to hear himself pontificate. He's an egomaniacal narcissist, an idiot, and he is not his own man. And that's a fact. And this whole Venezuela thing, the world's largest oil reserves are in Venezuela. That's what this is about. It's greed.
Yeah.
It's absolute lust for control of that oil. You see. Go ahead.
Lindsey Graham is a big investor in war, and you've only got to follow the dollar dots, you know, to find out who is bankrolling him.
Absolutely.
And you've got the deep state in the United States. I think you've got the deep state everywhere, including Britain and Europe. But you've got the deep state who are running things. You know, Trump is only window dressing. He is being waved one way by the breezes that come from the deep state. And it's going to cause America, the United States, like Europe, has got a lot of problems, and the last thing they need is more problems. The world has changed. Some of these people have got a mindset of the 1960s and the 1970s. Mm-hmm. It's a different world from Kennedy's today, a totally different world. You read that story, as a matter of fact, thanks to you, Jeff. It's a number one story again because of you. But these new weapons, these doomsday weapons that are being made by Russia, and to some extent China is playing catch-up, is they are a real threat. I've said this before. The United States does not realize that for the first time in its history since 1776, they are reachable from Europe. Right. It's, you know, Russia is now, as we're talking, they've got these unbelievable submarines, nuclear submarines, cruising off the east and west coast of the United States. They don't even need them. They have got weapons now, multi-weapons, in other words, one rocket coming from a Borei-class submarine can decimate, I think it was going on memory, I think it was 18 Russian cities. One missile, it just splits up in the air over the United States, and Atlanta, Chicago, absolutely everywhere else, just goes up in a puff of smoke. That's the different world. They didn't even, in Kennedy's time, nobody had the reach to cross the Pacific or the Atlantic to reach the United States. So while Europe was completely, absolutely devastated by the United States Air Force, the Germans or anybody else that they picked a fight on couldn't retaliate. Now they can. It's a different world, and we've got to get used to it, and we've got to live with it. So it's very important that he matures. Trump has got to mature.
I think time has passed him by, Michael. I really do. I don't see it happening. I hope we can pass him by. He's a dangerous man. And then you have Peter Thiel, the Palantir executive who created our wonderful vice president, Mr. Vance, who's changed his name 3 times already. What's that psychologically say about anybody? Anyhow, all right, the Russians and their weapons, their super weapons. No one has mentioned the Poseidon submarine. It's an unmanned submarine. No one has mentioned that submarine for a couple of years. It just came out the other day again. People don't remember. It's a submarine that is launched by an even bigger submarine, and it goes through stealth to find a place to lay on the bottom of the ocean. It just sits there. And if it's detonated, it creates a tsunami of something on the order of 2,000 feet high, and it throws that tsunami against the coastline, wherever it is, eastern U.S., at speeds in excess of the speed of sound. It could go inland who knows how far. It depends upon the topography. That's one weapon, the Poseidon. Now they've got this brand new missile, the Burevestnik, and that's a nuclear-powered cruise missile. It can fly indefinitely around the world. It doesn't have to stop for refueling. It's got a little nuclear reactor, and it powers it. And that is a nuclear weapon. That can fly anywhere and arrive at any time from any direction. That's another one. And then I do believe that they have further tech that they haven't disclosed yet that is way advanced, like the Oreshnik missile, which I'm sure you're aware of. And that is a kinetic weapon. It's not an explosive weapon. It has no explosive in the warhead. It has kinetic warheads made of, let's just say, titanium for fun. Titanium, something. And it comes down at hypersonic speeds so fast, when it impacts the ground, it does as much damage as a tactical nuclear weapon would do with no radiation. Those are just three of Russia's astonishing weapons. I'm not saying we don't have any on the West. We may. I don't know of any that can compare with those. But think, if they use the Poseidon up and down the East Coast of the U.S., they'll annihilate it. Same with the West Coast, but particularly the East Coast, Gulf Coast. They can't do anything about it. So anyhow, you're right. Whole new world, whole new technology. It's something that the average American, and I would suspect that many Europeans, really can't wrap their minds around. I just can't, and yeah. I don't blame them at all.
It's getting to a situation now where the Western leaders of the Western Alliance, many of them are appointed. They're certainly not representative of the people that they were elected by, the 11% that they were elected by or approved them. They're going through an intelligence test, and unfortunately, they are failing.
You know, yes, sir.
You and I are pretty ordinary guys. You know, I think we're speaking for a lot more people than the so-called heads of state of Europe and the United States. Yeah. When you listen to broadcasts like this, if you listen to people like me and you, ordinary people, when we go to a bar and we talk to ordinary people and they spill the beans, they've got to come to a stage of reality. Otherwise, things are just simply going to get worse. They're not going to get better on their own. So there has to come a point.
I agree. Let's look briefly at Ukraine. The Russians are moving almost inexorably from east to west. It's a very tragic kind of war to watch. It reminds me of World War I, trench warfare being fought with high tech, but it's still trench warfare to a large degree. That's not good. The last I heard, still after 3.5 years, the Russians have not been able to expel all of the Ukrainian military from the entire Donbass, which voted to become part of Russia. They're still in there. They're getting them out, but it's taken 3.5 years to force them out at the cost of, what is it, 1 million dead minimum Ukrainian military men and women, 1 million dead. The Russians have lost 100,000, 150,000. This is horrible. This is a tremendous holocaust. Go ahead.
Jeff, the population of Ukraine in the Soviet times, you're talking 1990, so it's yesterday, was 56 million. It is now less than 20 million. Wherever I live in Europe, all I can hear is Ukrainian voices. Many of the cars have got Ukrainian registration plates on them. You know, they've
Right. In
as
Europe?
A matter of fact, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We're full of them. This is a very small city where I live, and I think it's 7,000 Ukrainians are living here in a very small city in Europe's second biggest country. So, it's cataclysmic. It's 19 million where a population was 56 million, as Dmitry Medvedev of Russia says. Yeah. You know, now we can call Ukraine Era 404, not found. You know, it's disappearing. If the country, the landmass is still there. It used to be Europe's biggest country, Ukraine. in geographical Europe, that is. It used to be the biggest country. Now, in terms of population, its population is very, very small. You know, not much different. Yeah,
15 million have fled, and they'll never come back. That's at least...
Many more than that, you know, because what they say is, they're talking about the millions who have fled to Europe. They never mention the millions who have either been absorbed or fled to Russia, which is even bigger. I think it's 22 million are now Russian citizens. There used to be, 3 years ago, in 2022, Jeff, they were Ukrainians. Now they're Russians. And they said that only 2% of the Ukrainians who fled into the European Union will return to Ukraine. And many of them are my friends. You know, I live in the society here in Spain. They're not going back. They're applying for Spanish citizenship. They're going to the Spanish language schools. It's very, very tough to get citizenship in Spain. It's much easier in Germany and Britain or Poland or wherever they are. They want to become Polish, they want to become British, because we're in a bad state, but not as bad as Ukraine. Ukraine will not get back on its feet. But that was the fatal mistake that was made, you know, back in 2014, when we had the changeover.
My guess is that the international Zionists see Ukraine as an extension of Israel, call it Greater Israel. They are in control of the government now. They don't care about Ukrainian people at all. They've liquidated over a million of them in this war. They couldn't care less. And then we can quickly just comment on the outrage. There's no words. There are no words of what's happening to the human beings living in Gaza. There are no words. And then the West Bank, they're beginning to come under the boot as well. These people who are subverting and subjugating human beings like that have no relationship, in my view, to a normal, modern man or woman. These evil beyond measure, this country. It's policy.
It's the first time in the world.
But yes.
It's a televised Holocaust. You know, it's the first one. We've had an awful lot. You know, they talk about the Holocaust as if it was the only thing that had ever happened, which many question anyway. And if you can't question it, then you've got to start thinking about it. But, you know, there have been many, many genocides unfortunately, across the world in the last few hundred years. And the Philippines and the rest of it. But what we've got to focus our minds on is this is the very first Holocaust that has actually been televised. We've watched the slaughter going on. We've watched the Palestinians being removed, replaced by their own people. This started off with Britain, the Balfour Declaration, of course, and with Truman, who was under pressure, President Truman, who was under pressure to focus on the new Zionist Jewish state. But we are watching, it's almost as if you're watching the replacement of people around the world by whites. It's a reversal of what was happening in white South Africa. We're watching it. We're experiencing it. None of us can say we didn't know what was happening. You know, they keep on complaining to you that the Germans didn't know what was happening in the concentration camp, which, of course, is Jewish propaganda. But what we can say is that we did know what was happening, and we must be answerable as what did you do? And I fought against it, you fought against it, and a lot of us fought against it, as we did with COVID. We are the ones who can stand proud, Jeff. You've faded off the air, Jeff.
Okay, I'm here.
Good.
I think what you're saying is 100% correct, couldn't be more correct, and it's essential for people to know that there is knowledge. It's said often that information is the most important commodity out there. It's released, and then it's drawn back to control people. We have to fight for that information, that knowledge. Every one of your articles I learned something from. It's true. Every one. I learn something. I get a better perspective on things that otherwise are just almost unimaginable. So Michael, keep it up. Thank you for getting up. And you've got an awful lot of friends and fans over here that you're never going to meet, but they're here, and they do care. So thank you, sir.
Thank you. As a frequent visitor to the United States when I was a young man, I loved the United States. My father was an American citizen. He was in the Guard, Civil Guard. So we've got a lot in common. We are cousins in a closer way than you think. Thank you, Jeff, for having me on your show. It's a wonderful privilege to be with you and to bring the Americans over into the European perception.
Well, the privilege is mine, too. I'll send you the program shortly, and you take care and be safe. Keep it up, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff, for the honor. Thank you.
Okay, sir. All righty.
Bye-bye.
Mike Walsh, just a great writer, truly a great citizen of the real world, not the fakery that is pushed around by these con artists that call themselves presidents and prime ministers and whatever. All right. Our thanks to Michael Walsh for being who he is and for writing how he does. And we'll be right back.